This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. I don't know, maybe you were one of those kids who fell in love with Batman, the television show, or maybe Superman movies. Maybe you were fascinated by Wonder Woman's lasso of truth or the Hulk's brute strength next to David Banner's scientific genius. Well, we're all grown up now, but for those who have had the love, perhaps it has not waned. The movie Avengers Endgame opened with record-breaking numbers. The film has already netted more than $1.5 billion internationally, so this superhero thing is not just an American preoccupation. Woody Hood is a director of film and media studies at Wake Forest University. He teaches a very popular class called Superhero Cinema and American Mythology and joins us now to talk about our fascination with superheroes. Woody, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
What is it? What I mean, this has been with us for a long time, going back to the comic books, and I wonder what this phenomenon is in America, this love of the superhero.
Well, it's kind of very deep, right? So it's mythology, right? It actually goes back to kind of our ancient epic sagas, right? This is sort of our contemporary version of, you know, the Greek myths of, you know, Homer's Iliad, Odyssey, the, you know, Gilgamesh, even Virgil, Ovid, Beowulf. You know, these are sort of the stories of our time taken kind of into this this bigger realm, right? So we call them augmented humans, right? Where you take a human and you augment it in some way, right? You give them a superpower, you make them even just super smart or access to technology and resources. It's kind of, this is our mythology, and it's kind of our way of dealing with what we call sort of the cultural stresses of our time, right? Once you kind of blow something up a little bit bigger, you kind of feel it. But also, I think it's been this is also a commercial venture. I think you pointed out how much money that Endgame has already made, right? This is also kind of a business plan, right? And I call it obligatory viewing, right? So if you're just watching the Marvel movies up till this point, you have 48 hours of movies to watch to completely understand Endgame. Right? So yeah, sort of sink into your head for a second.
Right.
It's an obligation, right? So I watched all of the others. I have to go and see Endgame, right? Which is kind of just, it's a commodity, right? I have to go and purchase this because I've already purchased this. I'm already in. And I don't feel like I can sort of jump out. You know, how does it end? It's actually called Endgame. I need to know how it wraps up.
That's right. But these ancient pantheons, when we talk about this, I mean, it seems to me one of the critical differences, it has to do with the business component here. Because these ancient pantheons and myths emerged out of the mists, right, they stood on Mount Olympus and created, right, they created the virtues and the norms. And whoever wrote them didn't say, I wonder if they're going to like this. Maybe we should change the part about the cow, Zeus and the cow, and we should change that into a fair maiden because they're not going to buy a cow. That didn't happen.
Absolutely. No, and I sort of refer to these movies as, you know, sort of partly crowdsourced, right? Because they're watching social media, right? Whenever any superhero film comes out, whenever kind of any film comes out, right? They're looking at how audiences are reacting to it, and they're making those adjustments to it, right? And plus they do, as you pointed out, you know, they've got decades of material to draw on from here, right? So they'll throw out, you know, this or that, and they'll try to, you know, put this into the Marvel timeline or the DC timeline and to see if it works. And they'll sort of ping it off of their social media, and fans will have reactions to it, right? But they're also listening to fan theories going, oh, I think this is why Wonder Woman did that thing, or why Batman, or why the Joker was so crazy, or right?
Yeah.
And they'll sort of incorporate some of those things into it, right? So, but it does, I think the great thing about that, it is very commercial, obviously.
Yeah.
But it also sort of picks up sort of the zeitgeist, right?
Yeah.
Picks up kind of what we're worried about, what we're thinking about.
Exactly. And it has to do that. And so that's where it sort of becomes original material, to picking up on things that we don't articulate as well in just a few characters. I mean, I think The Dark Knight might be a good example of how superheroes take on these cultural conflicts and some of our anxieties. I'll play a clip.
You complete me.
You're garbage. You kills for money.
Don't talk like one of them. You're not.
Even if you'd like to be. To them, you're just a freak. Like me. They need you right now.
But when they don't, they'll cast you out.
Like a leper.
You see, their morals, their code, it's a bad joke. I'll show you. When the chips are down, these civilized people, they'll eat each other.
There it is, the interrogation scene from Batman, The Dark Knight, the 2008 movie.
It is iconic.
Yeah, and what does that tell us? What does that tell us about what we were thinking, what we were worried about?
Well, it's very much, I mean, we argue sort of in class, and most of us tend to agree that it's really a reaction to 9/11, right? And kind of the post-9/11 world, and it's kind of a, you know, it's dog-eat-dog, terrorists can come from any corner, you got to protect yourself, save your own kind of thing. And it's such a great sort of emotional scene. And what you realize there is that, you know, Batman and the Joker, they're literally like Harvey Dent. They're two sides of the same coin, right?
Right.
He is kind of his own worst monster. The weird thing about this is, though, ultimately, most of these movies tend to end up on the very positive side with hope, right? The Joker ends up being wrong. Right, he sets up a debate at the end where you have two ships, and both ships, they have people on them. One's criminal and the other just some innocents, and they have literally bombs, and they get to decide to blow the other ship up. Are the Joker's going to blow them both up, right? And both of the ships decide not to blow the other one up. Right, that there's something deeper in humanity that we connect to that's kind of still there, right? Are they still selling, you know, that as a fantasy, as a commodity back to us?
It's a good question. And the other thing is, have to have the premise has to be believable in order for it not to be pure melodrama, right? In other words,
absolutely,
the idea that there are the good, that there's no distinction between the good guys and bad guys. It's only which side you happen to be on. If you didn't buy that at that moment of the movie, then the payoff isn't quite as powerful at the end.
It's not. It's not exactly right. And it's the same thing with the Thanos argument, right? Should we just wipe half of the people out of the universe? Then we have more resources, right? Which actually isn't true. We know that's not true. But in that moment, you kind of go, wow, is that possible, right? Would that work, right? And as I told my students, like, yeah, no, that's what the Nazis did, right? And they bought into that, right? Germany, unfortunately, bought into that, at least politically, not obviously everybody. But yeah, we've kind of seen how that didn't really work out. That was a very bad thing.
What about the films that don't work out? You can't just put a cape on somebody and make it work. And boy, Marvel has figured that out. And I mean, both, you know, they, in all of those fantasy worlds, they've had their failures, have they not?
They have, and they're really dangerous because these films are incredibly expensive to make, right? And so that's why they try to be very careful about what they're launching out there. And every film has its failures, you know, even when it's successful, right? So Endgame, Infinity War made a lot of money, but they still have their issues, right? But some of them are actually kind of laughable, right, and kind of goofy. And I think that sort of speaks to it. You know, there are some really deep, hidden, you know, sort of meta-narratives underneath a lot of these stories. At the same time, on the surface, these are really kind of silly, goofy things, right? Infinity War is about a guy who steals jewels and puts them in a glove. Ultimately, right? If you want to summarize,
it's just uncomfortable, if nothing else, right? Yeah,
right, absolutely, right. And sometimes they're just, you know, clunky moments, you know, where things don't, where you're sort of, you know, expecting something, because they always have to have like the interesting twist, right? So the cliche, but a new version of the cliche, so it doesn't feel so cliche. And sometimes it just flattens out, and we don't have the emotional impact that we were hoping for.
I'm going to give us an example. What I'm going to do, actually, I'm going to play the clip first, but then I'm going to have you explain it, because the reason I want to do this is because it has all of the characteristics of a superhero film. This will sound like a great superhero ending, and then you're going to tell me why that thing just fell so flat. This is actually from Batman versus Superman. Comes toward the end.
Why did you say that name? Why did you say that name?
Stop!
Please,
stop!
Why did you say that name?
It's his mother's name. It's his mother's name.
He
Here we go. Batman versus Superman. You got the big music. You got the swells. You got the dramatic voice. They're all yelling.
Everything. And it looks great. It looks awesome. And when I got to that moment in the movie, I remember sitting in the cinema watching this, and I laughed out loud, and I was not the only one, right? Because it's you're building up to this sort of great crescendo, and you have these two sort of ideologies, right, that are really battling themselves out, right? And there's not a really good, clear answer to it, right? And so their only way out of the corner that, and I tell my screenwriting students, you know, write yourself into a corner and then find a great way of getting out of it. And apparently the story comes out of Hollywood is this was not actually in the script originally. But yeah, ultimately their only connection is that they literally just, both of them have the same name of their mother.
Their mother has Martha, the same name. And right. It's Martha.
Right. It's Martha. It's Martha. And it's even just the sound of Martha, right, which is kind of an old school kind of name where you kind of go, huh? Wait. So we've destroyed the city. We pummeled each other. Right. But it's okay because I got a mom named Martha and you do too. That's awesome.
I didn't
awesome.
Know that. I, did.
I didn't
so
know that. Right, right. And I feel, Amy Adams, who's an amazing actress, yep. Right? And she's doing her best to pull that off. And it just, it can't work, right? It's ridiculous, right? And all of these things are ridiculous. And I think even when you go back to some of those Greek myths, you know, there are moments that we go, wait, Zeus did what with a cow? How does that, huh? Right, yeah. Where we don't, they don't work.
I think they felt differently about cows back then. That's all
maybe
I can say.
Maybe they did, exactly right. It was metaphor.
But right? It brings, and it obviously leads, it lends itself so well to parody. I want to play this clip from Deadpool, from the Deadpool franchise. Let's listen to the clip. We'll talk more about parody and what that means for the industry.
Wait! You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed. This guy's got the right idea. He wore the brown pants.
Oh, the brown pants. In the movie Deadpool, which parodies a superhero movie. And I'm talking to Wake Forest film professor Woody Hood, who teaches a class on superheroes. So, yeah, I mean, that's inevitable, right? That we've reached.
It is, right. So we talk about sort of the life cycle of a genre, right? And this is ultimately kind of a science fiction genre. It's a subgenre, however you want to call it, right? And they genre mix all the time, so that's no big deal. But it's when I saw Deadpool, usually you get to a stage of where you're sort of setting the classical rules for the genre, right? But when everybody knows those sort of classical rules, right? So the super has to do this and this and this and this, right? And the narrative has to end this way in some way, right? But in a clever way, hopefully. When we get to the spoof of it, that tells me that the genre is going to be slowing down pretty soon, right? And then we start getting sort of revisionist versions of it, right? I love Logan from the X-Men franchise, right? Which isn't a superhero movie really at all, right? It has superhero elements in it, but it's a family drama about death and dying and your commitment to your children and your aging parents, right? All these other things that are wrapped up in it. But yeah, when I saw Deadpool, I kind of went, we're going to start slowing down and changing it into something else, right?
But hasn't it always been that way? I mean, I'm not talking about movies, but if you go back to the Batman TV series, I mean, that was absolutely parody from the get-go. And that was TV
absolutely.
In the 60s or 70s.
Absolutely. And it doesn't always necessarily come in sequence, right? I told my students, I said, go back and look at the first, the only, I guess, Green Lantern movie, a live-action Green Lantern movie, because it was such a failure. And it's really kind of weird and goofy. Going, this is really camp. This is actually going back to those Batman movies, right? But it comes out of sequence, right? So when fans see it, they go, huh? I don't get this, right?
Right, because you don't know enough to parody yet, yeah.
Right, exactly. They don't know the elements that are being parodied, right? Right. But the Batman stuff, that was actually coming out of the old variety shows from television, right? So they actually already had the language. They were just adding in the superhero element, right? It was just sort of this slapsticky, goofball-y, you know, Benny Hill kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Which is fun. But, you know, students who really think of superhero movies as a more serious fare, when they go back to and watch the original Batman, the Adam West Batman, they're lost. They have no idea because they don't have that, the language of television, right? They didn't have the language of, because television had to come out of vaudeville, right? Because that's what they had access to. That was their material. So it made sense that Batman started out that way, right? So when Batman came back in the 1980s with Tim Burton, you know, this dark, serious, kind of powerful movie, people were blown away, right? And the same thing with, you know, Christopher Reeve. They got to see a man actually flying in a movie, right? It didn't seem goofy. It wasn't just jumping like, you know, the old serials.
Where
you know.
I could actually see the cables.
Right, exactly.
The other thing, I would say this about Batman, too. Not only was it a parody of television itself and the form of television that it had taken, which people were growing tired of in that moment, it was also the rise of the anti-hero. And so it was perfect to do that kind of satire on the heroic, earnest, deep-voiced hero who is just mostly goofy, right? And there was kind of a zeitgeist that was wrapped up in that parody as well, it seemed to me.
Right, and it's, as we're studying these things, we see the emphasis from the hero to the anti-hero and even to the villain, because sometimes the villains are more interesting than the heroes are, right? I think Joker is a lot more interesting than Batman sometimes, right? And Thanos is a really great, powerful, weird kind of idea.
We are talking about our love affair with superheroes today on The State of Things. Woody Hood is director of film and media studies at Wake Forest University, teaches a class on this, and is with me now. You are disappointed with the way Wonder Woman ended. Talk about that, and we'll listen to a clip. But give us your take.
You know, and once again, so we talk about problematizing these movies, right? They're problems, and they have really great things. I think Gal Gadot is a phenomenal actress. She's got tons of personality, and she really sort of, you know, kicks butt all the way through the movie. But all of these, as soon as we sort of get something, we go, oh, this feels really good. We have these moments, and it's kind of that Martha moment, right, where we kind of go back to the cliche and not in a very good way, right? So we have this super powerful meta-human who in her in sort of the final face off with her half brother Ares, that she doesn't rely on her real power. She has to rely on, and this is the cliche for female superheroes and women in a lot of different genres. It's their emotional value, right? Not their physical strength, not their intelligence. It's their emotions. They can win the world over by their emotions, and you see that happening in the big climactic scene of Wonder Woman, right? And there are other problematic moments in there where she's in high heels, and you know, it's she still has to have a love interest. So it kind of falls back on its cliches. At the same time, it's trying to maybe push representation a bit further down the road.
Well,
it fails.
I was going to say representation is the thing that Hollywood is trying to get right. Black Panther, a huge hit for Marvel. Talk about that in terms of representation for African Americans.
Well, and it's, the question, I think, and what Black Panther did smartly, even though it's brilliant movie, right? And it's really fun. It's super entertaining. It has a great story. But it's about the idea of self-representation, right? Because we've been through periods in Hollywood of blaxploitation films, right? Where you had people who were trying to represent black culture and black communities that had nothing to do with it, right? They were just trying to cash in on it. So I think the great leap forward with Black Panther, other than its box office, obviously, is that you actually had people who had a chance to not just an all African American cast, and it was mostly African American, not African, but they it was written by, directed by, right? So it was kind of their chance to tell an African American story through the lens of a superhero movie.
So the genre has certainly evolved.
It has, absolutely.
And it
will continue to for a while, absolutely, yeah.
Woody Hood, Director of Film and Media Studies at Wake Forest University. Thanks for joining us, Woody.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
His class is called Superhero Cinema and American Mythology. And yes, it fills up pretty quickly, but you can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. Live music just ahead with John Shane and F.J. Ventry. Please stay with us.